This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Democratic presidential hopefuls sparred over domestic and foreign policies Tuesday night in the first of two nights of candidate debates. The AP's Tim McGuire reports from Michigan.
In the first of the two Detroit debates on CNN, candidates sparred over ideology versus pragmatism while they all seek the ouster of President Trump. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg says there won't be any work on climate change unless there's a change in the White House.
We will deal with climate if and only if we win the presidency, if and only if we beat Donald Trump.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was asked the difference between him and President Trump, saying the U.S. cannot be the policeman of the world.
Trump is a pathological liar. I tell the truth.
Both Sanders and fellow progressive Elizabeth Warren were chided for their various plans, including Medicare for all, free college tuition, and forgiving student loan debt. I'm Tim McGuire.
On Wednesday, former Vice President Joe Biden, currently the frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nomination, and national surveys of Democrats and some independents will be at center stage. U.S. and Chinese officials on Wednesday began their 12th round of trade talks in Shanghai. The talks follow a June agreement between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping to revive efforts to end the costly fight over China's technology ambitions and trade surplus. Both sides are trying to temper hopes for a breakthrough. Chinese leaders are resisting U.S. pressure to roll back plans for government-led development of industry leaders in robotics, artificial intelligence, and other technologies. Washington argues those efforts depend on stealing or pressuring foreign companies to hand over technology. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The National Defense University, an institution funded by the U.S. Department of Defense, published a journal article suggesting Washington should share its nuclear tactical missiles with Japan and South Korea to deter North Korea's growing nuclear threat to East Asia and the U.S. The article's release back on July 25th coincided with North Korea's launch of two short-range missiles. Then, early Wednesday, local time, South Korea's military said North Korea launched multiple unidentified projectiles. The article suggests American nuclear sharing with Japan and South Korea could be undertaken in a manner similar to an agreement the U.S. signed with the five NATO member states. Currently, the U.S. shares approximately 180 tactical nuclear weapons, such as B-61 nuclear bombs, with Belgium, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and Turkey. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is looking for vacant property where permanent facilities to house migrant children can be built here in the country. We get more on that story from the AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
The Trump administration is looking for new sites to hold unaccompanied minors who have crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is looking for potential sites in Central Florida, Virginia, and Los Angeles. The facilities would hold children under age 18 who entered the United States illegally without a parent or guardian. Earlier this month, HHS said it was scouting sites around Atlanta, Phoenix, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, Texas. Conditions in existing migrant facilities have become a key issue in the 2020 presidential race, and there have been protests nationwide. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The Department of Homeland Security issued a security alert about security on small planes. The APZ Donahue reports.
The warning is these planes could be vulnerable to hacking.
An attacker could hack an airplane if they had physical access to the wiring of that airplane. So they would have to be able to touch it.
Todd Beardsley's cybersecurity firm Rapid7 found an attacker could potentially disrupt electronic messages transmitted across a small plane's network.
I know now an attacker could attach a device to these aircraft and take kind of stealthy control.
The Federal Aviation Administration says a scenario where someone has unrestricted physical access to a plane is unlikely. But the report is also an important reminder to remain vigilant. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have confirmed a second case of the deadly Ebola virus in the city of Goma. More than 2,500 cases of Ebola have been reported since the outbreak began last August. For more news, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawian activists say they will defy a police ban on demonstrations.
Our letter is very clear. The police cannot stop Malawians from exercising their right to demonstrate. We have already also announced we are going to do demonstrations on Tuesday next week, where we would want to mobilize 3 million Malawians to go into the streets.
Gifford Frappens is vice chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. Organizers in Liberia say they are safe. The state protests will resume today, Wednesday. Human Rights Watch calls on South Sudan to release 6 detained Juba Airport officials. The sister of abducted Tanzanian journalist says the family has not been able to see him. And UNICEF says an unprecedented number of children are infected with Ebola in the DRC.
When I left, there were 12 new confirmed cases. 5 were alive and will have the chance to access treatment, but 7 had died in the community. Having this number of community deaths means we're not ahead of the epidemic.
And we'll tell you the story of South Africa's reclaimers. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi says it protests demanding the resignation of Malawi Election Commission Chair Jean Ansa will continue despite a police ban on demonstrations. The Inspector General of Police banned the group from holding its weekly demonstrations, citing logistical challenges and violence. The protesters have been demanding the resignation of Malawi Elections Commission Chair Jean Ansa for presiding over what they say was a fraudulent May 21st general election. Malawi's immediate past Vice President Saulos Chilima on Tuesday evening said the mass protest must continue. Gift Trapens, Vice Chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, says the protesters have a constitutional right to demonstrate and that the police cannot stop them.
Our letter is very clear because we know the law. The police cannot stop Malawians from exercising their right to demonstrate. So our letter is very clear. We're telling the Inspector General of Police that we have no mandate to stop Malawians from exercising that right to demonstrate, because our constitution is the supreme law of the land, that we cannot curtail the rights of Malawians.
It seems to me the police are concerned that the protests have turned violent.
Yeah, I think for us the issue that they are raising their letter was that they don't have capacity. For us, I think the issue is not about people are violating the law or not, but I think the issue that they raised to us is the issue of capacity. So if you have capacity issues as a police service, the appointing authority, which is the government, to see how can they resolve the Malawi police service to make sure that they're able to execute their duties, they're able to manage demonstrations. Because this is not the first time that we have had demonstrations in Malawi. So we are surprised that the same police can come today saying that they don't have capacity. That is why we are saying that as a police service, you need to talk to the government. They can also give you resources to resolve these issues of protecting the citizens, demonstrators, as well as the property.
Is it a feeling that maybe there's some bad blood between your group and the police inspector general?
It's not about there's a bad blood between the police and the inspector general, but I will tell you one thing, that our police is partisan. They serve the interests of the political party. I think it has been like that. That's why you see that Inspector General was very angry, because we were able to point what he has felt as the Inspector General of Police. But Malawians are very basic people, and we have seen that Malawians don't trust the police. Not necessarily that they don't have the capacity, but I think it's because they haven't been professional. We have a police service that has shielded the ruling party, where we have some party militia, party officials that have been on the wrong side of the law. But as the police officers, they haven't even arrested those individuals. They have protected the party followers. And that's why we are saying that as the Inspector General of Police, we have been taking sides of the law. We have protected people who are siding with the ruling party.
So, Gift, what's next? I mean, the police have banned the protests. What's next for your group?
I think what we're saying is that our constitution is very clear. the Inspector General of Police has no mandate to curtail the demonstrations. They cannot stop demonstrations because they have no mandate, because our constitution is the supreme law of the land. But what we are doing also, we have instructed our lawyers to go to court to stop that kind of thinking. We have already also announced we are going to do demonstrations on Tuesday next week, where we would want to mobilize 3 million Malawians to go into the streets.
Gift Trapens is vice chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. In Liberia, organizers of the Save the State protest say they will resume their demonstration today, Wednesday. The Council of Patriots first demonstrated on June 7th. A second protest call earlier this month was called off at the request of the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia. The organizers want President George Weah's government to respond to their demands about the country's worsening economic situation and corruption. Henry Costa, one of the spokespersons for the Council of Patriots, says the demands include that President Weah should declare his assets.
We will begin to assemble as early as possible at the Capitol Hill, exactly where we assembled on June the 7th for our peaceful protest. This time around, we're just gathering to ensure that our demands are acted upon.
So what demands are you talking about?
The demands that were contained in our petition statement, which was read out and subsequently submitted to the Office of the President and received thereof, was acknowledged. We want the President to publish his assets. We want to know what he owned before coming in and what he now owns. We're concerned about the massive personal property acquisition spree. We want action taken in the $25 million Mapop fund. We want people prosecuted. We want the CPN, the sale of tracking numbers for importers. We want that discontinued. We believe it makes matters worse. It helps to increase commodity prices in the face of a 28% food inflation. We are concerned about those things and many, many more. So those are some of the things that are contained in our petition statement that we want action taken on.
Did your group ever deliver the demands to the Liberian government? Because I think I was told that you did not give your demands, or no one from the government took possession of your demands.
That is incorrect. You might have heard that from a junior minister of the government, that the minister of state, who is the president's chief of staff, had one of his people receive it from us, signed for it, and they have ever since acknowledged receipt of our petition statement.
Talk to me about the by-election. There was a senatorial by-election on Tuesday. What happened?
Well, officially tomorrow, the MEC will begin to release the results. But we've already, they have posted the results on every polling place. They've posted all, we have all of the tally sheets in our possession, 100% of them. And the results that they are going to begin to announce tomorrow will be no different from the results that have been posted on the tally sheet. And we are in a very significant lead. In fact, according to our own war room and our own tallying, the margin is now, the last time I checked, it was 64,000 votes for our candidate and 43,000 votes for their candidate. The margin is over 20,000 votes. It's an irreversible margin. There's no way she can catch up. So we are in a very comfortable lead. And our representative candidate in this tournament of 15 is also performing very, very well. So, yes, we're in a commanding lead, one that it looks like it's going to be meeting until the votes are all counted.
I asked the question because it seems to me there's some conflicting opinion about the results on social media. The ruling CDC saying that its candidate was leading, and the opposition saying that their candidate is leading.
Mr. Borte, the CDC had a press conference today. They call on its supporters to remain calm and wait until the MEC announces the results. And we have the tally sheet. They have the college. One of the contestants, Mr. Kimi Weeks, has already congratulated our candidate, Mr. Darius DeLong, on the victory because Kimi has the college. So this is where we're speaking from.
Henry Costa is one of the spokespersons of the Patriots, Council of Patriots in Liberia. He spoke with me from the capital, Monrovia. Today is Wednesday, July 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch has called on authorities in South Sudan to release six Juba airport officials arrested last year. Human Rights Watch Associate Director for Africa, Jehan Henry, says one of the airport officials, David Subek Dada, is in need of medical attention. Henry also says the continued detention of the six officials violates the Constitution of South Sudan.
This is a case of individuals who were arrested last November in connection with some dispute involving landing fees with a Kenyan Airways Flight 540. But the issue isn't the underlying case. The issue is the fact that they have been detained for so long without any charges. And more recently, they have been transferred to the general prison, the Juba prison. But all this time, they have not been taken to court. One of them has serious health problems and hasn't been getting adequate health treatment. And so these cases decided to bring them to the attention of the public, not only because these individuals have rights that have been violated and they should be either charged or released on bail or basically allowed to be, they should be charged or released.
Last week, you also put out a statement regarding the editor-in-chief of Al-Watan Arabic Daily newspaper, who was picked by the National Security when he went to inquire why he was blocked from traveling to Nairobi. Do you have any updates about Christopher?
Two commonalities. One is the fact that it's national security agents who have been detaining and harassing journalists linked to, you know, the content of what they publish. This is a form of restriction on freedom of expression. But the other issue is that when they are detained, again, without charges, without legal process. So the case of Christopher is another illustration. Over the years, we collect dozens of cases. Dozens of such cases come to our attention on a regular basis. The problem of national security detaining people, either preventing them from travel, taking their passports, or in other cases, we've had activists who were picked up in other countries, in Kenya or in Uganda, and then transported back into South Sudan without any legal process.
These reports of arbitrary arrests in South Sudan have become an issue with the international community. What is really the end game here? How is this going to be solved?
Well, one of the recommendations, we should be taking up the reform of the National Security Act as a matter of urgency. The act does not include some of the protections that it should, and so reforming that law is one piece of the puzzle. But otherwise, we think by shedding light on these cases, we may be able to show why the authorities and convince authorities to do the right thing in these cases.
Jehan Henry is Human Rights Watch Associate Director for Africa. She was speaking with John Tanza via WhatsApp from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The sister of abducted freelance Tanzanian journalist Eric Kabendera says the family has not been able to see him. Tanzanian police confirmed Tuesday that they are holding Kabendera for questioning regarding his citizenship. Dar es Salaam Special Zone Commander Lazaro Mambosasa told a press conference on Tuesday that Kabendera was arrested after failing to respond to a police notice about his citizenship. Preska Kabendera says when the family heard that their brother was being held at the police station, they rushed to take food and clothes to him, only to be told by police that the journalist was not there.
We've been at the police station until 6 evening. We've tried to ask at the main counter about his whereabouts, and they actually told us that he was not brought at the police station, as they said in their press conference. That was to our surprise, because they did a press conference and say he was the central police station. So when we heard that, we just went straight, because since he was being arrested, we didn't know his whereabouts. We didn't know the station where he was taken to. So that was new to us as a family. We were anxious to know if we could take any other services, like legal services or social services, food and everything, clothes, because by then it was arrested for the past 24 hours. So that's the first thing we did after the police admitted that they're having him for questioning at the central police station.
Yeah. Did the police tell you why they have him for questioning? What do they want to ask him?
Actually, they spoke about his citizenship. They are afraid that he's not a Tanzanian. They are not actually saying which country is from or which citizenship is from.
But you are a Tanzanian, but he is a Tanzanian, is that correct?
Exactly. We are Tanzanians. We are all born in Bukoba. He has more than 5 brothers here, sisters. He has aunties and all that. It's like half of our clan is here. These are not the first allegations. He has been accused with the same allegation in 2013. It's our surprise now. It's coming back. Don't know why, and why is it that it's only Eric and all the family that is going through the same issue. The same issue that he's been through 2013 and today again. He has more than 8 brothers and sisters. Why not any of us?
When the police came to get Eric, were you in the house or do you live in a different house?
Yeah, we live in a different house. But after I heard the news, I hid it there because I was trying to call his wife. They are taking her phone too. So any communication from the house. So I had to rush there because not far from where I live. Me and my husband rushed to his house to see what's going on.
Do you hope to try again to go to the police station on Wednesday?
Of course, we're doing that the same thing today morning because when we try to ask the police about his whereabouts and all that, after we failed to get him at the main desk, after he was called from the jail room to see if he's there, we made sure that he was not registered there. So we had to go to the upper officers, and they say if he Mambo Sasa himself said he's at the police station, we advise you to go and see himself. So that's what we are holding to, waiting for us 7 a.m. to be there.
Prisca, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Prisca Kabendera is the sister of abducted freelance Tanzanian journalist Eric Kabendera. She was speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. The United Nations Children Fund, or UNICEF, says an unprecedented number of children in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is being infected with Ebola, and that many are dying from the deadly disease. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Children account for more than 700 of the 2,671 reported cases of Ebola. UNICEF health specialist Jerome Fuffman says more than half of the youngsters infected with this deadly disease are below the age of 5. Fuffman, who has just completed his third tour of duty in northeast Congo, calls this number unprecedented. He says it is proportionally higher than the number of children who were infected in the 2014 West African outbreak, which affected about 28,000 people, killing more than 11,000.
When I left, there were 12 new confirmed cases. 5 were alive and will have the chance to access treatment, but 7 had died in the community. This is bad. Having this number of community deaths means we're not ahead of the epidemic.
Fuffman says people living in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces are facing both a public health emergency and a humanitarian crisis, making it particularly difficult to bring this complex outbreak under control. He says building community trust is crucial for this effort. He says treating children for illnesses other than Ebola is critical. He tells VOA when a child falls ill, the mother does not know whether the child has malaria, measles, or Ebola.
You need to be able to take care of that child, whatever disease it is. By doing that kind of programs, that we will be able then both to treat that child for whatever disease he or she has, and also identify quickly the Ebola cases and refer them and control the outbreak.
Fuffman warns it will not be possible to bring this epidemic to an end without greater international support and more resources. He says UNICEF will have to more than triple its budget to respond to this complex crisis. Fuffman says his agency will require about $170 million over the next 6 months. Main activities, he says, include epidemic control, helping communities strengthen their response to the disease in at-risk areas, and delivering essential services. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa has a recycling rate of just under 60%, according to industry studies, a statistic that puts it on par with some European nations. But recycling in South Africa is done by an informal network called reclaimers, thousands of men and women who sift through trash to identify recyclables to sell. This vast high labor system fits with the nation's high unemployment rate and is experts argue, a different model of innovation. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
One man's trash is another man's bread and butter. Leonda Flotshio has been sorting through Johannesburg's trash cans for 9 years. He's one of the city's 9,000 reclaimers, an informal network of workers who collect and sell recyclables. His job has big impact. Academics estimate that reclaimers collect and recycle up to 90% of South Africa's post-consumer packaging and paper. In doing so, they save municipalities up to $52 million in landfill space annually. It's becoming a global trend.
We find reclaimers in just about every post-colonial city across the world. Reclamation exists in contexts of high income inequality, so that you have people who are wealthy enough that they're buying things and throwing them away when they still have value or can be reused, and you have people who are so poor that they are willing to go through other people's trash to extract these materials to make a living.
Flechwayo, who studied banking but could not finish because of financial constraints, says he sees great value in his work.
We're literally subsidizing the community and the municipalities, actually, because an average reclaimer would collect about 200 kilograms of waste a day. You multiply that by 9,000 reclaimers, that takes it to about 2 million tons or something. That's a day. That's redirecting a lot of material out of the landfills.
It's grueling, messy, sometimes dangerous work. The hours can be punishing, and sometimes reclaimers find odd things.
I found a thumb. It is. I just opened a plastic bag, normally, you know, in a rush, and just jumped. It just killed my day. I just closed the bin, took my trolley, and I went home.
Reclaimers in Johannesburg are trying to lobby for recognition through groups like the African Reclaimers Organization. Chairwoman Eva Mokwena takes pride in her work.
My area is clean because of me. The environment, it's clean. Like the work that I do make me to be more proud. Even people, they try to put me down. But I keep on flying this flag of being a reclaimer.
Samson says her research has been eye-opening.
And what I learned from them is how that informal work, particularly in the case of recycling, underpins an entire very large profitable industry. And so what it makes me realize is that we need to change the way we think about the economy.
And that, reclaimers say, is what it's all about. A different way of looking at problems. Where most people see trash, they see opportunity. And a chance to make their world a little cleaner. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Tuesday that he was appalled that more than 12,000 children were killed or maimed last year in some 20 countries at war or in a state of conflict. The unprecedented level of violence against boys and girls was recorded in the UN's annual report naming and shaming countries and armed groups that perpetrate such violence. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have confirmed a second case of the deadly Ebola virus in the city of Goma. Goma is home to more than a million people and lies directly on Congo's border with Rwanda, where tens of thousands cross on foot daily. And the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi says its protest demanding the resignation of Malawi Election Commission Chair Jean Ansah will continue despite a ban by police. That is it for this Wednesday, July 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thank you.